following program is suitable for all ages.
Buffoon. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffoon, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the ass and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. I'm playing right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffoon 55. The John Buffoon Show.
Hello and welcome to Buffoon 55. I'm your host, John Buffoon, here on the Bears Barroom Network. Thank you for joining us. Ecstatic to be here. It's Packers Week. Not only is it Packers Week, it's game day. The tiebreaker game tonight, Thursday Night Football between the Bears and the Packers. The all-time series at 94-94-6. The tiebreaker tonight. So consider this your pregame meal. The Buffoon 55 show right here with me, John Buffoon. Before we get into the Bears and Packers breakdown, I'm going to throw it over to my producer, Aldo Gandia. He's going to give you the premise for this show in case you missed it last week, which, by the way, why'd you miss it last week? Go ahead and listen to it after the show and then listen to this one. Aldo, go ahead and give him the premise of the show.
Thank you, John. Yeah, the premise is really simple. We've got five questions about the Chicago Bears and then five questions about the Green Bay Packers. And John has 55 seconds to answer each question. After he after those 55 seconds are up, he's going to hear a whistle that goes something like this. There it is. And that's his signal to close it down. So it's a fun, fast-paced show. And John, before we get started, I have to ask you, last week you said that that Bears-Steelers game was your Super Bowl. Now, tell me what happened after that great play by Jordan Howard to seal the victory. What kind of celebration did you have, and did you stick it to any of your good friends?
Well, the T-shirts are being printed. The ring should be here in a couple weeks. Still waiting for the trophy to be completely engraved. But I can say that my group chat with all of my friends from back home went pretty silent. Nobody said anything. So all I did was type "so dot dot dot," and I didn't hear many responses because all leading up to that entire week, they were they were ripping the Bears. They sent me this big toilet seat that looked like the Chicago Bears sea, and they said, "Does you notice anything familiar?" And I kind of kept quiet because I was being cautiously optimistic about the game. But now the Bears have won in 2009, they've won in 2013, they win in 17. They probably won't play the Bears, or probably won't play the Steelers again until 2021. So I'm looking at like 12 years of glory here, where I have bragging rights over my Steelers loving friends. Now they may enjoy the playoffs, they might even make the Super Bowl, but no matter what, they can't take away from me that the Bears have beaten them. So, yeah, like I said before, I don't care. I care about the rest of the season, but this was a big one for me. I'm pretty excited about it.
Oh, excellent. I'm really, really happy for you. And I tell you, actually, I thought about you about 20 minutes after the game, which is about how long I celebrated. Was jumping around the house after that thrilling win. So how about we get started?
All right.
All right. So question number one. And again, this is on the Bears, and John will have 55 seconds for his response. I want to ask him, what was the most impressive part of the Bears' win over the Pittsburgh Steelers Sunday? John, you are on the clock.
Well, I got to say that it's the fact that they were basically put one-dimensional, and they still ran the ball down the Steelers' throats. The Steelers had to have known those stretch runs were coming, and the blocking was still there. And, I mean, props to Jordan Howard for gutting it out. Man, his shoulder looked like it was bothering him. He would have to come out. He was injured, and you think, okay, that's it for the day. He tried it. It's not going to work. But then he goes back in, and then Tariq Cohen shows that he wasn't just a flash in the pan week one. He comes out, and he is just a firecracker all over the field. The line Obviously, it's not going to be an elite pass blocking group, but they did show that they can be road graders at times. They can move the line, they can move the football, and they can keep in positive yardage. But I mean, I got to mention the secondary as well. I mean, other than the lucky break they got in the first game and the first play of the game when Martavis Bryant was wide open down the field, that they look good. Other than that, I mean, and how about Kyle Fuller? I mean, this is a guy that they were talking about potentially getting cut at the beginning of the year, and then he just shows up and he's balling out. It's great to see him out there, and if he can get something going, the Bears could be cooking with gas on defense.
I totally agree. It was quite impressive, and for me, you know, that Jordan Howard effort, I mean, that is going to be the thing that I will always remember. There's one other thing about this game that I will always remember, and we'll probably talk about that with the next question.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But that Jordan Howard heroic effort, you know, we see tons of heroic efforts in the game of football because these guys sacrifice so much of in their body and mentally to get these wins. But, you know, it was so visible what Jordan Howard was going through, and for him to finally get that closing touchdown, I think that's part of the reason I was celebrating for 20 minutes. All right.
Yeah, what an effort.
Yep, really. Okay, we're going on to question number two, and got to ask you, what was the most unimpressive part of the win? John, you are on the clock.
Well, I think it has to be that the Bears did everything in their power to lose this game. they didn't really throw the ball downfield. They took a few shots to Wheaton, and it looks like he can't play dead in a Western right now. Hopefully those hands come back to him at some point. There was another close interception from Mike Glennon that he threw basically right to Mike Mitchell, who he couldn't come up with a pick. That could have been a devastating interception. And then the incomprehensible stupidity by Marcus Cooper, who needed that extra yard just to celebrate, because, you know, you can't celebrate in the end zone. You got to do it a yard out from the end zone. You got to stop. So that 4-point lead sounded pretty good towards the end of regulation of that game. And if that would have cost the Bears the game, you can only imagine the narrative going into this week, at least throughout the media airwaves. But I mean, they also needed a muff punt, and they needed a turnover near midfield to kind of keep it close. Their starting field position was pretty good on a lot of those drives. So I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. It was a great win. They showed that they could gut out a close win. But, man, they got as many breaks as possible, and at least they kind of took advantage of some of them.
Yeah, you know, and I got to tell you, I was reminded in the middle of the week by a Chicago sports reporter that Wheaton was coming off of hand surgery. I guess he had a broken pinky finger for a while, and maybe that led to the drops, but still, I mean, he must have been catching those balls in practice for him to be out there. So it's, I agree with you, it's inexcusable to drop two passes. And then the other thing regarding Marcus Cooper, I wanted to ask you, how, if you were, you know, the special teams coach, how would you have handled Cooper when he got back to the sideline?
Well, I really don't know. What do you say to a guy that makes that dumb of a mistake? I mean, he has to know it's completely, like I said, incomprehensible. But what, you just look at him and say, why are you putting, you, we are not, this, the, if I'm him, I'm looking at him and say, hey, we're not that good of a team, so we need every point we can get, and you're celebrating before you even get in the end zone. The points are at a premium when you're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers and you're on the Chicago Bears. And if you're on a bad team and you're trying to pull an upset, you need every break you can get. Run into the end zone and then run through the tunnel if you have to, and then celebrate in the end zone, jump into the crowd, blow the football up, I don't care, get into the end zone first. This is, you are trying to pull an upset. This is not like you're a heavy favorite and that was the icing on the cake and the Bears are up by 20. You needed those points, and it came down to they really did need those points at the end of regulation. And then, you know, the running game bailed out Marcus Cooper, because he would be the most hated man in Chicago right now if they would have lost that game.
Yeah, you know, and the funny thing is that the NFL this year is allowing touchdown celebrations, and so
yeah,
he never even got to do his whatever celebration he had in mind, or maybe that's what it was, loafing towards the goal line. If that was his idea of a celebration, it's a bad one, no doubt.
Embarrassing.
Okay, question number three. What do you think of the advice that Aaron Rodgers had for Mitch Trubisky this week when he said that the best thing for his career is for him to sit this season? You are on the clock.
honestly, I think that's kind of a blanket statement. I mean, that obviously worked for Rodgers, but we do see guys that get thrown to the wolves a little too early. You look at guys like David Carr, maybe even back to Tim Couch when he played for the Browns. But you also see guys that flourish like Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. And if you want to be even more modern, you can say Jameis Winston or Carson Wentz. You can't tell me that Rodgers didn't want to play earlier. It wasn't his choice to sit on the bench for all those years. He was behind Brett Favre. Hey, Mitchell Trubisky is behind Mike freaking Glennon. So it's not exactly the same exact position that Aaron Rodgers was in. And I think you got to throw in a lot of different factors. Like the system comes into it. Some people say Dowell Loggins' offense is well suited for Trubisky because of his athleticism and there are some of the options that they can throw in there. But ultimately, I think it comes down to the quarterback's character and is the line going to get you killed? Now, if you look at the Bears line, I think it's sufficient enough. But so then the question turns into, does Trubisky have the maturity to learn from mistakes or is he going to go into the tank? And the scariest part about this is we have to trust the Bears coaching staff to make that call and hopefully they make the right decision.
Yeah, that is a little bit scary, isn't it? And, I thought immediately when I read that Rodgers said that is, Rodgers is probably saying this kid could probably beat us better than Mike Glennon.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm going to advise that. He sit and play Glennon.
At least for a week, yeah.
Exactly.
Give him another week.
All right. Question number four. In their second meeting last year at Soldier Field, Ty Montgomery ran for 162 yards on 16 carries. The Packers rushed for 10 yards per carry, 9.9 to be official. Gerald Freeman, the Bears' best tackler, I think he was out in that game, and he's also out in this game. So how do you stop Ty Montgomery if you're Vic Fangio? John, you are on the clock.
Well, that was a pretty close game last year. I believe it was 30-27. They kind of took Rodgers out of it. He was 19 for 31 with 252 yards, zero touchdowns, zero interceptions. So perhaps the game plan was to try to make the Packers beat them on the ground, which clearly they did. But, Montgomery hasn't looked great this season. 54 yards, I think, is high so far. I think the Bears go into this a little more confident. They held Le'Veon Bell to 61 yards last week. I don't think Ty Montgomery is going to be the X factor in this game. I think if anyone's going to beat him, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. They have two rookies on the depth chart behind Ty Montgomery. I think the Bears defensive line, I think they're going to be really putting a lot of pressure on because of the Green Bay line, which we'll probably get into a little bit later. But I don't think it's going to be the Ty Montgomery X factor show where they got to try to shut him down. I think there's a lot of other factors they got to go after it. So I don't see. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. This is my guess. I don't think that the running game from the Packers is going to be the main objective for them tonight.
Okay. Well, I probably would agree with that and think, that they're going to try to run Ty, no doubt. And if he breaks one early, and what I mean by break is 10 plus yards early, they'll probably feed him the ball until the Bears can stop it. So,
well, yeah, that's always the great equalizer. If you can rip off chunks in the running game, well, then yeah, it's going to go downhill, and they're going to feed him. So, I don't know if they're going to try to do that early. If they do, it's imperative for the Bears to try to stifle the run game early to turn the Green Bay Packers one dimensional.
Clearly, so you talked about Aaron Rodgers, and that's our fifth question here in this Bears segment of Buffon 55. Question number five is, what's the most important part of minimizing Aaron Rodgers' play? What does Vic Fangio's defense have to do to neutralize a guy who I think is the best quarterback in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers? You are on the clock.
Well, I mean, you must get pressure on Aaron Rodgers. If you allow him to extend the play, you can almost guarantee it's going to be a big gain. I mean, I think you throw the house at him and get in his face. I mean, I'm not overly confident in leaving the secondary on an island, but if you only rush three, you're going to die from 1,000 cuts, and there's going to be about three or four 85-yard drives of him dinking and dunking and taking what the soft defense gives him. So I don't think you need six sacks, but I think you need a ton of QB hurries and hits. You have to make him uncomfortable and don't allow him to get in any kind of rhythm. And another thing is this defensive line, they have to be disciplined, especially on the road at Lambeau on a Thursday night. Rodgers loves getting the defensive line unsteady and drawing them off sides for some of those free plays of his. So when he's getting down under center and you hear that green 19, you see these guys just jump off the line and they're halfway into the backfield by the time the ball is snapped, they're going to jump off sides and that ball's getting launched 50 yards down the field and it could be a backbreaker. So just watch the ball. Don't jump off sides, no free plays. It's hard enough to contain Rodgers as it is. Don't give him any freebies.
Yep, I totally agree. You know, he can kill a team if he's allowed to run out of that pocket, which gives those receivers time to get open. So they got to keep him in that pocket, but at the same time, pressure him to get rid of that ball as quickly as possible. It's very easily said and very difficult to do. All right, John, are you ready to answer some questions regarding the Green Bay Packers?
As ready as I'll ever be to talk about the Packers.
All right, question number one in our five-pack of Packers questions. Number one, the Packers' run defense is ranked 21st in yards allowed. Do you think that the Bears will continue running the ball effectively like they did versus the Steelers, or might the Packers find a way to stifle this duo of Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen? John, you are on the clock.
Well, I don't think the Bears have any other option. I mean, they have to run the ball. I mean, do I think they'll do it to some success? Yes, but I mean, what we saw last week, there's no other option. And a short week, probably the worst thing imaginable for Jordan Howard right now. I mean, he's going to play, I guess, and that shoulder probably isn't feeling the best. I mean, you're only getting a couple days for it to rest. But if I'm the Packers, I'm looking at the film and I'm seeing all those stretch plays. And I adjust accordingly. You kind of keep the corners at home. You kind of keep them on a hard flat. And since you aren't overly worried about the receivers blowing off the top, then you kind of keep them at home and you can kind of attack those stretch plays a little bit. And if the Bears do throw the ball, it's only going to be about 3 to 5 yards anyway, so you can recoup that. In theory, if you bring those cornerbacks up at home, keep them at home, and you kind of keep everything up front, that would open up throwing lanes for Glennon. But we kind of know how that goes. If you keep things open for him, he's still going to try to check it down to a tight end or a running back that's only about 2 yards away. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't think they were going to run the ball well last week, and they did. So let's hope that they are able to do that. But I think the Packers got a lot of good film to look at defensively.
Yeah, that's exactly my fear, is that they've got 3 weeks of film, and you know, Dom Capers, the defensive coordinator with the Green Bay Packers, he's probably going to find a way to stifle that run game unless, you know, the Bears come up with some different looks and some different strategies, which leads to my second question. The Packers' pass defense has been very stingy in that area. They are 7th in the league, and they're 9th in sacks, averaging 3 a game. Does Mike Glennon have a chance? John, you are on the clock.
No, but to elaborate a little bit, he can't move around. He locks in on one read. He completed one pass to a receiver for 9 yards last week, 100 yards passing, and he still threw some really bad balls, made some really bad reads. The Steelers at points were putting 9 guys in the box, and it would have been really easy to check out to a pass, and he still just ran Howard into a brick wall and occasionally did. So he's not reading very well. I mean, for a completely vanilla offense, this guy looks like he's in way over his head, which is kind of kind of hard to imagine given the length of his neck, but okay, that was mean. I'm not going to take pot shots at Mike Glennon. I can take plenty of pot shots at his performance instead of his looks, but some think he may have bought himself a few weeks with this win over Pittsburgh, but in reality, they won in spite of Mike Glennon. So I mean, I think after this game, regardless of the outcome, unless Glennon throws for 450 yards and 6 touchdowns, which I'm not really anticipating right now, but I think after this week, the clock officially starts on legitimately expecting Mitchell Trubisky to start.
Yeah, I have to agree on that. And I've actually said a couple of prayers in hopes that Mitch Trubisky makes his debut, maybe in the second half, a dramatic comeback, and, you know, the Trubisky era starts with something cool. Okay, let's talk about this Packers offensive line, because they've had troubles protecting. Oh, let's see. Let's not turn that off. Excuse me. The Packers' offensive line has had troubles protecting Rodgers. Now, injuries to their 2 starting tackles is a big reason why. Now, those starters might be a go tonight, but regardless, they surely won't be 100%. Do you think that this Bears front 7 will find success? I mean, that has to be obvious, right? John, you're on the clock.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if their starting tackle is going to play. And if they don't play, some of their depth is hurt, too. They were signing guys off the practice squad for a while. So that their depth at tackle is not going to be good. Even if Bulaga tries to go and he gets banged up a little bit, they don't have a lot to put in after him. But like I said before, not only should they find success, they have to if they want to win this game. We saw some good pressure on Roethlisberger last week. And if that depth really is shaky on the Packers line, they need to feed on that. And I'm going to throw it back you, Aldo. Does this have this for me at least? This kind of has the feel of a Leonard Floyd statement game. I mean, we saw him flying around the last couple weeks, making some good plays, but I think this kind of feels like a 2 or 3 sack game for Leonard Floyd, like saying, "Hey, I'm here. Look at me." Or is that wishful thinking right now? I think this is a good opportunity for him.
Yeah, I think this is a great opportunity. That breakout game that he had last week was against Don Barkley. Many of those plays, who was a backup because the Packers had injuries to the offensive line last year, and so he's probably going to face the same kind of caliber of player. Now, Vic Fangio was asked about Floyd's lack of sacks this season, and he responded that in the first 3 games he had Floyd dropping back in pass coverage a lot, and that he expected that the sack totals would increase as the season goes on. It just kind of depended on the schemes that they were facing. So, you know, so part of his lack of sack totals have to do with Fangio's play calling, but at the same time, Fangio did say he can do a better job of getting to the quarterback. So we shall see.
Let's hope so.
Okay. Now, the Pack, when I wrote this question out, John, I got to tell you, I got teary-eyed. The Pack, they're on a roll, 14-2 in their last 16 games against the Bears, and they've now evened that all-time series to 94-94 with 6 ties. Did you ever talk to your uncle about this rivalry, and what are your overall thoughts about Green Bay possibly taking an edge in this series?
It's sickening to think about, but I did actually talk to him a couple times about the Packers. I mean, he would always say, you know, he went into every game with the same mentality. Every opponent was the same. He wanted to rip everybody's head off the exact same way as any. It didn't matter who was in the helmet or what jersey he was going. But he would always kind of have a smirk when he was talking about the Packers. He said the old man, which is what he normally called George Halas. He said the old man would always get into a lather when it was Packers week because he hated losing to them, and that drive and to a certain extent hatred would seep down into the players. Now, through the evolution of time, you don't always see it in today's NFL because players are constantly moving teams and they're doing endorsements together and they're vacationing together. And I think it's more of a fan hatred now because Bears fans hate the Packers. Packers fans hate the Bears. So that's still alive. But there was a time when the two sides genuinely did not like each other. They maybe hated each other. And it spanned the whole way from ownership to players, to fans, and that's whenever my uncle played there during the late 60s and the 70s, where these two teams certainly hated each other, and you could always kind of tell that with him.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm old enough to have seen your uncle play, and I remember those games. I mean, they were brutal affairs. There was some hitting there, and they weren't helping each other get back up after they knocked the player on their butts, and then that carried over to the Mike Ditka Forrest Gregg area, where there was a authentic, genuine dislike between those two coaches. And many Bears fans will remember there was a guy named Charles Martin, I believe. He took down John McMahon in a brutal, brutal way. I mean, about 5-7 seconds after McMahon threw the pass, and he just picked him up and body slammed him to the turf. It was not very pretty. And as you said, you know, that kind of stuff doesn't happen anymore. But that rivalry between the fans, boy, it's real. It's real. All right, we've got one more question regarding the Packers, and then we're going to get to your prediction about the game. Here it is. We all know, actually, this is, this is Packers, really. We all know about the NFL controversy and the president's anger with the NFL for allowing players to kneel during the anthem. Now, the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are asking their fans to link arms during the anthem. Do you think that's a good idea or not? You are on the clock.
I don't think it's a bad idea. From what I understand, I think, or at least by today's standards, it could be wrong. It could be different tomorrow, or it might have been different yesterday. The linking of the arms is the most acceptable form of protest, or I guess presentation or anything. I guess that's the most acceptable form of it to this point. Ironically, it's probably the most interesting if the Packers fans do it, because that is a public team and anyone can own a piece of the Green Bay Packers for whatever reason you might want to do that. But I mean, so you can technically have thousands of quote-unquote owners in one place showing solidarity. I mean, this whole thing has exploded. It would be nice to see everyone on the same page, but can we really realistically expect that? 1,000 people in unity, thousands of people in unity. Would it look nice Yes. Is it realistic? Unfortunately, no. But I have no problem with, you know, whether it's Aaron Rodgers or the Green Bay Packers wanting to bring people together to kind of, you know, kind of find a middle ground in a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, you know, and my biggest fear is that it might be an emotional gesture, and it might help the Packers get off to a really strong start. That's my biggest concern. You know, let's forget about the sociological whatever right. implications, political implications. I'm just worried that that kind of unity, if the fans do all participate in it, and the players, the Packers players get juiced about it, that they could come out to a quick start. But we'll see in a few hours here. All right, John, we get to that part of this show where we turn off the clock and you are allowed to do your prediction. And I've got to tell your audience here that you are now officially 1-0 in the prediction business because you chose the Bears over the Steelers last week. So we're on pins and needles here. Are you gonna pick the Bears again to go two straight wins? Take it away, John.
Well, I kind of hedged my bet because I said that they might cover the spread, but they might lose. So I kind of covered both of those. I'm gonna do the same thing this week. I'm gonna choose for the Bears to underperform, and then maybe I'm giving them my own. I'm cursing the Packers by doing that. So I'm gonna say I think the spread right now is at like 7 points. I think it being at Lambeau on a Thursday is a big deal because it's a short week, and when you're away on a short week, that cannot be easy. So I'm going to say that the Bears do fall short, even though I'd love to pick them to win. Maybe I'm doing this tongue in cheek, but I'm going to say the Packers come away with this one in like a 20-13 victory. I predicted it last week that the Bears would make some kind of stupid mistake in the second half, and we saw a few of those, but they were able to overcome them and win. I think this is just kind of I think this comes out as being a real boring game, which is what the Bears probably want. They don't want to see a lot of points. I think the Bears fall ultimately 20-13 on the road to the Packers. But like I said, I hope I'm wrong. I would love to get the tiebreaker game for the Bears to go up 95-94. But, you know, like I said, I'm going to use my brain on this one.
I'm going to be thinking about you while this game is on. Now, you're actually going to be in the newsroom watching. Hopefully it's a slow news day for you so that you can peer over the TV and take a close look at the Bears upsetting the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, I'm hoping there's not anything crazy going on in South Central Pennsylvania at the time of this game. I'm really hoping that everyone gets all the stuff out between, you know, like 2 o'clock and like 6 o'clock. So by the time it's like 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, I can have all my stuff ready to go. I can start writing my stories, and then meanwhile, I'll have the Bears game on in the background. But either way, you can bet that I'll be paying attention to the game. But I guess that about wraps up this edition of Buffon 55. Be sure to follow me and the rest of the Bears Ballroom Network on Twitter. You can find me at JD Buffon, John Douglas Buffon. That's my full name. Also, be sure to give Bears Ballroom at Bears Ballroom a follow. And then also, Aldo, I'm pretty sure I forgot your Twitter handle, but I think it's Aldo Barkeeper. Am I getting that right?
That is correct. Yeah, but follow Bears Ballroom. That's the key one. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Same time, same place next week. Go Bears.